Okay, so I'm going to tell you something about vortex. And my
Where's
collaborators
the
are,
vortex? I don't see it.
you'll see. Well, the collaborators
Okay,
are
play.
Leslie Baxnadi and Nick Bigelow at the University of Rochester. And Dr. Su Yi used to be Li Yu's student, now he's my postdoc at Rice. So in keeping with the tradition here, the borderline. So the thing is, we think the vortex matter in atomic condensate is under very good control, both theoretically and experimentally. Of course, I'm only going to tell you the theoretical side. So we can do, well, we can do first principle calculation in the mean field level. And the calculation, the first principle mean field calculations, is possible. And the experimental results, some of the experimental results agree very well with calculated results. And
this is only in mean field that you mean.
What is the first principle?
In
the mean field.
We don't understand.
Do you mean gross PDFC equations?
Yeah. And of course, the result of this system serves the fertile test ground for phenomena encountered elsewhere. But I think you all know this. So, oh, what happened? Okay, so this is the outline. I'll first talk about the rotating condensate without optical lattice first, and then talk about adding the optical lattice. I'm actually not directly involved in the first part of the work, but it's very beautiful work, and it's closely related to the second part, so I'm going to talk it anyway. And the main person behind this work is Leslie Baxnadi, and he's actually graduating and looking for a postdoc position, and if any of you have an opening there, and I think he will be an excellent catch. Yeah, because I missed that trip.
Oh, you missed the trip.
Yeah. So, okay, since this is an expert audience, I don't have to just jump into the equations. And we do the calculation in the quasi 2D geometry, and this is quite valid, particularly under fast rotating limit, because when you rotate a condensate, the density of the condensate thins out, and when at fast rotating limit, the density is very low. So, the condensate looks like a pancake shape. And the way this equation, of course, is written in the rotating frame. So you have a centrifugal term. Omega is the rotating frequency of the condensate. And it is written in dimensionless units. So this is kinetic energy, and this is a trapping term, the interaction term, and chemical potential. So to get to the ground state, we just evolve this time-dependent GP equation in imaginary time. And this is the typical result we get. And the red dots is the position of the vortex cores, and it organizes into this nice triangular lattice.
Excuse me, I missed
the
yes. point about imaginary time evolution.
It's a standard technique to find the ground state.
Low
energy state, so. Yeah. So if you evolve the Hamiltonian system in the imaginary time, the ground state decays slowest. So
oh,
at in the end.
How you numerically reach this
yeah.
state? Oh, I see.
You know what's intriguing? I can see distortion of your lattice, which is this new, or at least it looks like in the last three rows. I start to see some distortion. Is that an illusion, or is there?
Yeah,
really
at the edge.
Yeah.
Because this is inhomogeneous system, so you have to take the finite size into account.
Yeah.
But actually, it's amazingly quite irregular. And to understand the geometry, we can use a classical analog. So if you have a classical fluid with density n and in a bucket rotating with frequency omega, and what's the free energy of the system? So it's all kinetic. So this is the free energy of the system. And the velocity field takes this form, and plug into the equation, you get the free energy of the system. So there are two terms. The first term actually describes the repulsive interaction between the vortex. And the second term is due to the centrifugal rotation. So this term will try to pull all the vortices into the center of the of the system. So it is this competition between the between these two terms that gives you this regular lattice shape. Yes?
That is capital quantization?
Yes, that's the Whiting number.
So then if you have a vortices of opposite charge, how does the equation, because it comes in this
Oh, yes, well, this is for vortices with the same winding.
Yeah. Right. So if you have a opposite charge?
Then you change the sign of this one. He's asking, this is for vortices with same sense of rotation. If it's the opposite, then you get a plus.
You get a minus one in the power of
IJ,
right?
So. So to understand the great, the ground state structure is actually characterized by a few length scales. So the first one is the healing length, which determines the core size of the of your vortices. And the second one is the so-called magnetic length, which is a name borrowed from the superconductor system, because in the superconductor system, vortices are nucleated by magnetic field. And this number determines the intervortex distances. And the last one is, of course, the Thomas Fermi radius, which is given by this one. And the rotation reduces the effective trapping trapping frequency. So you have a reduced trapping frequency here. And by looking at this, we can see that by tuning omega, the rotating frequency, we can change the relative magnitude of these length scales. And so we get different regimes. And these are the different regimes we will have when omega is very small, smaller than C over R. C is the speed of sound. R is the Thomas Fermi radius. So C over R is essentially the lowest compressional frequency. And when omega is much smaller than this one, then the whole system responds to the rotation of the rigid body. So the system can be regarded as an incompressible fluid. And the hydrodynamic approach is valid in this regime. And when R, when omega increases, the fluid becomes significantly compressible. And eventually, when omega is larger than mc squared, that is when the healing length becomes comparable to the intervortex distance. So different vortices start to overlap with each other. And this is the so-called mean field quantum Hall regime. And well, we can see the overall shape in the Thomas Fermi regime, the stiff and the softer Thomas Fermi regime, all have the overall shape as an inverted parabola. And in the quantum Hall regime, it looks more like a Gaussian. As Jason can tell you why. And,
I cut the Gaussian initially is because I was told by like mentalists, they guarantee and assure me that it's really very perfect. That is way to the edge, maybe. And then so if that's the case, then there is a very strong assumption. Then it's very easy, simple to show. Well, also really good to show that it's Gaussian. And then the question is that whether the mentalists really can be sure that the vortex is really perfect out to the and maybe a small distortion would change things. And now, because this vortices is interact logarithmically, so the long range, so it's certainly true that by small distortion, you can change the profile. And then I think there are recently there are a couple of papers from Chris and from they claim that there's a small distortion. I actually have no problem that with this because it is conceivable we can distort, and they think they agree with the experiment better.
No, the experimentalists agree with them, actually. Eric Quinnell and Beck can recheck his data because of Dan's work, and if he found this distortion,
so,
absolutely.
No, so now
it's like 2% or something.
No, this is the experimentalists. may be dealing with a reinvestigated two-dimensional system. So I don't know whether that's the origin. But according to all this theoretical work, that there is a very small distortion of the vortex lattice.
From the Thomas.
On the other hand, but those are really, I think there's some approximations in calculation also. But if you say you need to strictly revolve the ghostly gas heater in Mercury, that's what you find.
Yeah.
That's a solid result.
But Eric just had a paper 2 days ago, which his experiments showed it's not a Gaussian.
Experimentally, it's not Gaussian, and I'm fine, but he's finding the 2D, he's saying that in his numerical calculation, it's 2D system, he found it Gaussian. I admit no problem, it's not Gaussian.
Yeah, if you put it in the noise member level, that's not
okay.
What do you mean by Gaussian? Gaussian density.
The envelope shape, yeah.
No, I mean, but even in those other levels, then the density distribution of the zeros, i.e. the vortex cores, the question whether it's a perfect lattice or not. And in general, there's no reason there's only a perfect lattice.
Because of the inhomogeneity of the
It shouldn't be. It need not be, yeah, but he's saying that he's seeing that it's a Gaussian. How could a Gaussian be easy?
How good a Gaussian? Actually, it's pretty good if you can draw this in a 2D. Yeah, I didn't have a picture,
it's interesting. But so the question whether there is a difference between 2D and some quasi 2D that three-dimensional things coming in.
Jason, or are they truly in the quantum hole region?
This issue depending on the ratio between two length scales. One is the magnetic length. The other one is the trap size.
So you write quantum hole, and you study classical field. In my opinion, these are just incompatible, because quantum hole implies that a particle is a good notion.
Mm-hmm.
Classical field description, the particle is just irrelevant notion.
Mm-hmm.
The notion of lowest Landau level implies that particle is a good quantum number. You cannot introduce the very notion, in my opinion, just correct me if I'm wrong, of lowest Landau level for a classical field. Because lowest Landau level basically tells you how many particles you can just put into it. While the notion of particles is just, you cannot just speak this language with classical field. So I would say that quantum hole is exactly the strongly correlated state. So why your quantum hole state is not just on this strongly correlated side? Why it's a classical?
Tony, have.
Well, I was just going to reinforce this point by putting it in a slightly different way. The whole idea of using the Gross-Podolsky description relies on the assumption you have a single macroscopic eigenvalue of your single particle density matrix, and the quantum hole limit you don't.
Absolutely. It's absolutely different ground state. Yeah. They have nothing to do with the challenge.
This is mid field of quantum hole.
Yeah, I think it's
quantum hole. What is quantum?
Jason
is in a better position to answer this.
Because it was invented by me.
Yes.
The
reason is when omega becomes very large, the density of the condensate becomes much thinned out. So if you the two-body interaction term becomes a small perturbation, and if you can neglect that, then the remaining Hamiltonian has a formal resemblance to the Hamiltonian that describing an 2D electron moving XY plane with a B field along Z direction.
Then I would just say that I understand what you're saying, but in my opinion, just quantum hole is just misleading. It's just
close to Landau level state.
But then you should not accuse Mann, you should accuse Jason.
In my opinion,
it's not misleading for the following reason. First of all, it was very clear that one is in a in the both testing regime, I mean, as long as one is in a regime, I have a psi. Now, however, once I have a psi, then I can expand a psi in a set of single particle state any way I want. I can even expand it in plane wave or whatnot. However, it happened, you are in a regime where the expansion, all the terms are all in the, all the wave functions are in the quote unquote the slowest lambda level. So epsilon, this mean zero epsilon that you have, can be extended in a very high accurate form of a sequence of functions which are all in the of the low lambda level form.
You mean that you're going to use this lowest lambda level eigenstate for a basis of a good eigenmode of linear. However, that has consequences.
It's not just a wave.
So the limit doesn't have consequence, or so this limit doesn't exist. I'm just frustrated.
Please don't be frustrated. Because it's true that what your understanding of correlated quantum Hall is still preserved. Everybody talk about quantum Hall in the correlated state. They're all in that regime. And they also recognize, even if we can definitely recognize that in the boson case there is such a regime. And there's a lot of interest in studying the transition between them and how they go from one to the other. It's not clear at the moment, but it's a lot of interest.
But
at some point, something's going to fall apart. I mean, the question after you rotate for a while, then here, one assume there's a psi, but at some point, there's no psi anymore.
That's what you basically mean by quantum Hall, because it's just this term has been invented a bit earlier.
I think here, the quantum Hall in the mean field limit is defines the limit when lambda level spacing is larger than interaction energy. However, the number of particles at the lambda level is much larger than the one that most lambda level decays. So you still have many, many particles. Well, in the fraction quantum Hall,
I perfectly understand this limit.
That's a limit of quantum lattice. You do the same thing for
the lambda.
I am not going to answer any question. I think Khan should proceed.
Okay.
I'm not going to answer the question. Later, it is my fault.
So I mentioned that melting problem McDonough is doing. But anyway, we can discuss this. So, well, in any case, when omega increases further, of course, we get to the quantum melting regime, and the system becomes a strongly correlated liquid system. And that we cannot address with the mean field theory. But we are hoping that our mean field calculations can shed some light on this problem.
Just to further clarify, this incompressible, you don't mean incompressible liquid, you mean something else.
Is it compressible?
No, the stiff.
This one.
I think it is incompressible. Do you have gapless modes then?
I have what?
Do you have gapless modes?
It is gapless.
Apart from the finite size effect, you still have gapless modes, right?
Yeah.
Then it's why you call it incompressible.
Yeah.
That's why I'm frustrating. They call it quantum Hall, but it's compressible.
Okay, well, we all know that the ground state is not the whole story of the system, so we want to look at the excitations, and this is quite a standard technique, and I'm sure you're all familiar. Just with the Bogle-Bob treatment, we get the Bogle-Bob Degen equations, and solving the equation, we obtain the mode frequencies and the mode functions U and V. And then by plotting out these the density fluctuation amplitude, defined like this, phi zero is the ground state wave function, and U's and V's are the ones calculated from the Bogle-Bob equation. And we look at the phase and the amplitude of this quantity, and we can obtain the wavelength of the excitation and also the associated angular momentum. And from this, we can identify what the nodes are, or what the modes are. For example, we can identify the Kachenko mode, which is, in this mode, the vortex cores deviate from the equilibrium position, and they rotate around their corresponding equilibrium position in the elliptical orbit. And this actually has been, some of the Kachenko modes has been detected in the experiment of Eric Cornell in last year. And their measured mode frequencies agree with this calculation very well. And this is the inertial mode, or also called the bulk mode. And in this mode, the excitation involves the whole bulk condensate. And in this particular example, this is actually it's a breathing mode. And there is also.
The pictures look the same, so how?
Yeah, you actually have to look at the movies. You have to put the time dependence.
Part in the middle. See, I also had to look at this for like 3 minutes. You see in the middle? In the middle picture, there's a bright part in the middle, and then a dark ring, and then it's bright.
Yeah.
Raises like that.
By looking at the static pictures, it's not very helpful, actually.
Right.
But you're
so
putting.
What's the meaning of inertial mode?
It just means that it's also called a bulk mode, so it involves the whole condensate fluid.
Does it have angular momentum contact, or what?
Yeah, you can have angular momentum. But in this particular example, there is no angular momentum. There's zero angular momentum because it's breathing mode, but you can have all kinds of other modes.
Is this an intra-density distribution?
Yeah.
You see, the vortexes becomes much larger near the.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Edges, but this is much larger than what's predicted by Dan Shilley and Leo had this paper.
Yeah.
It's only a few percent. I mean, here it's sort of like.
Well, he has a much smaller than.
Yeah.
Actually, the pretty big lattice already.
Yeah, I think depending on the depending on the lattice, if you have many vortices, it will look. Much uniform.
Which paper? You mean the paper they just put out? The long one or the short
one? The long one.
The long one, you mean? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, if he did his numerics correctly, then you cannot argue with him. No, I mean, because they also doing 2D, then I actually don't think anybody makes Chris or Dan Shilley that means 3D thing. I'm baffled to there. So anyway, continue.
Okay. Well, the left mode is the surface mode, and the name suggests it occurs mainly on the edge of the condensate. And this mode is particularly, these modes are particularly important in the nucleation of vortices, because in the nucleation process, the vortices enter into the interior of the condensate from the edges. And if you increase the rotating frequency, we can see that some of these surface mode become dynamically unstable. And okay, now after identifying all these modes, we can plot out the excitation spectra, and it's plotted in two ways. This column here is the mode frequency is plotted as a function of LZ, which is basically the angular momentum of the excitation. And the modes are categorized into Kachenko mode, inertial mode, and a surface mode. In the quantum Hall regime. In the mean field quantum Hall regime, the spectrum is dominated by the surface mode. And the Kachenko mode and the inertial mode are compacted into a region near omega equals 0 and omega equals 2, respectively. This is because of the compaction is because of the decreased bulk modulus and the shear modulus of the system when you increase omega.
So the low rotation limit, the surface mode actually has a very sharp rise at a certain, look at the first
panel
with this one.
Oh, actually, these are probably inertial mode.
Oh.
Yeah.
I guess I still will understand physically what's the difference between inertial and, can you tell me how things oscillate?
For example,
in
the
case, you say that both the gradually suppressed when the angular momentum increases.
They're not suppressed, but the spacing becomes much smaller. The spacing between the modes.
Shear modulus.
Yeah.
Okay. And. What do they go? They just go down in frequency? Is that what they do?
Or yeah, they go down in frequency, and the spacing between the modal frequencies becomes much smaller because of decreased shear modulus.
But all these modes seem to be like the square root of omega.
What?
In the last one.
The surface mode.
It's a very beautiful result for the... if you can make an analytic loop, but yeah.
Yeah.
It all looks like a square root of omega.
Okay. And this one is plotted the function of quantum depletion of the mode. And this is in somewhat arbitrary units, but all three plots are in the same scale. So we can see as omega increases, the quantum depletion increases significantly, and that's because the melting point is approaching.
Oh, I see. So that's severe.
No, quantum depletion is the V square integrated over. It's a number of thermal atoms at t equals zero. So it's basically.
If the depletion is so large, so when you have the density profile, do you include the depletion?
Actually, this is arbitrary units. The real depletion is not that large.
Oh, I see. Because the last panel is 10. It's 10. The unit is 10. The other one is
0.04. Yeah, they are in the same scale, but.
The same arbitrary units.
Yeah, same up to
the actual value is actually still quite small.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So this Tachenkov mode, the golden band has some formula.
Yes.
Does that agree with this?
Also, James Eglin and company has also some results. They calculated the Tachenkov mode in the hydrodynamic limit, and this, so it's not include the compressibility of the fluid, and their mode. In this numerical calculation, we can show that depending on the relative magnitude of the helium length and the intervortex spacing, the Kachenko mode changes, but this is not captured in the hydrodynamic approach.
I'm not familiar with this. Is this if the Kachenko mode just the motion of the vortex cores relative to each other? Is that what you mean by that?
Relative to their respective equilibrium state, equilibrium position.
Right. And then the inertial modes are ones in which you have density fluctuations as well, or sort of microscopic.
Involves the whole bulk condensate.
And the surface modes, what are they exactly?
Oh, these are just in near the surface.
The thing, nothing disturbing about the thing is
Yeah. Actually,
like a high L mode in the normal situation, is that what you mean by surface?
Doesn't have a high L mode. I think just things are maybe just something small distortions. Maybe long wave length distortion on the surface.
Yeah. I thought they are the high L mode in the longest length.
Actually, in the quantum Hall regime.
Okay.
But these are the gap modes, right?
In the quantum Hall regime, actually, the surface modes are very closely related to the Landau states. Yeah.
So they're connected. No, the surface mode and gap.
I think it's gap.
Is it?
I don't
know.
Actually, I cannot answer that question. I don't know where
the
it's gap.
Example,
oh, you say.
Here, there's a gap. Here, the question whether this gap closes up when you go down.
Oh, okay. I see.
So
I'm not quite sure, actually.
What does omega mean?
Omega is the modal frequency, excitation frequency.
In units of
trapping frequency, yeah.
So it's a very precise prediction. So Eric Cornell and John and Dalibach can look for this mode. He's predicting a mode below 2, and then so if you see that surface mode, then you might be, one might say that one is. Have a set of Landau level functions.
Yeah.
Okay. This is very nice.
Okay, we can also look into the vortex dynamics, including a thermal bath.
So we have used up 33 minutes.
Okay, that's fine. So we have two bands, a condensated band and a non-condensated band. And the thermal atoms, the non-condensated band, behave like a bath reservoir. And to describe the particle exchange between the condensated and non-condensated band, we have include a non-Hermitian term, which looks like this. Gamma here is the rate of particle exchange between the two bands. Mu n is the chemical potential for the thermal atom. And by simulating this equation, we can show that how the vortices grows and decays. Here is an example. So initially, I have a steady state at, at omega equals 0.65, and I suddenly increase it to 0.85. And it, you can see the vortices gets into the system.
I'm not sure what you're plotting. What are
these
yellow?
These are vortices.
Coming from where?
Coming from the thermal bath, because I have a thermal bath there.
Yeah. So the thermal bath is. So you don't plot the thermal bath, I guess.
No.
It's a black background.
Yeah, it's just a thermal bath.
This is quickly
bent. And it quickly reaches the equilibrium.
Do you listen to the large gamma limit why everything relaxes so fast?
It depends.
Well, they don't actually seem to be reaching equilibrium. There seems to be a fine rotation
here. Well, eventually they will. Probably the final thing is not plotted.
What is the disappearance of some dots at the end?
Oh.
I mean, there are lots of coming in and.
It reached the edge and we didn't plot all, everything.
And this is still in the rotating frame, yes?
Yes.
So you're synced basically.
Yeah, it's in the rotating frame.
Is this in the lowest lambda level region?
No, it's not. No, this is a. Omega increased from 0.6 to 0.8, so it's the softest regime. Yeah. And of course, here is the reverse. Yes. This is a reverse process where the rotating frequency is suddenly decreased. Of course, the system spits out some extra vortices.
That's pretty cool.
Well, let's give me these movies, but he didn't give me the time scale, so I cannot really compare what the time scale is. Okay, now. Leslie Baxmati.
Okay.
And now let's add optical lattice. And so the reason to study this is, in general, an optical lattice does not have a matching geometry with the vortex lattice. So we want to study what, by the introduction of optical lattice, how the structure of the vortex lattice changes. Okay. So it's the same equation, but with the optical lattice potential here. And we assume a 2D square optical lattice. And there are lots of control parameters in the system, but we just want to focus on the parameter for the lasers. So that is V, which is the depth of the optical lattice, and K, the wave number of the laser. And so V determines the strength of pinning, because these the antinodes of the optical lattice behave as a pinning site for the vortices. And K determines the filling factor, that's the ratio of the density of vortices and the density of pinning sites. In this dimensionless units, it's given by pi omega divided by K squared. And again, using the same imaginary evolution technique, we can find the ground state of the system. And here are some density plots. This is for the filling factors equal to 1, so the equal number of vortices and equal number of pinning sites. So when V is rather small, we see that the vortex structure has still this triangular shape. Here, the green dots is the position of vortices without optical lattice. Black ones are the position of the vortices in the new system.
So with the pair of the lattice units, the distance between the dark spots?
I'm sorry?
What is the period of the optical lattice?
It's not shown. This is a density plot. And this is a very weak density plot, it's a very weak optical lattice. I'm not plotting. I will show you pictures.
So the yellow ones are actually the optical lattice.
No.
The red one is optical lattice. The other one is the green dots are the vortex lattice side.
The green ones are the position of vortices without optical lattice.
They're both vortices.
Oh, both vortices.
It's with and without the lattice.
Yeah.
Oh, it's this one. Yeah.
Yeah, green ones are the.
And your optical lattice is also triangular.
It's square.
But are you saying that a very weak optical lattice already caused a significant difference between the density?
Yeah, actually, it depends on what kind of vortices you provide. If it's cosine, I don't think it will change very much. So the whole pattern shifted a little bit.
So here the background with this yellow lattice is the vortex lattice with a very weak rectangular background
with no optical lattice.
Yeah. What did your question is always okay.
No, green is without the lattice, and the dark is with the lattice.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
But the lattice is a square. It's not triangular.
No, it's a square. Yes.
So even very small square lattice would change the density profile
so.
A great deal from the green dot to something like.
Isn't that just sort of a shift?
Yeah, it's a shift.
It's a shift to the lattice, right? It's not really doing much to the lattice. You're shifting it spatially.
Yeah.
These things all disappear.
Oh, because the black ones do not show here, so you just cannot see them.
The other ones, they are there.
Yeah, they're there, but you cannot see them.
Okay.
Now increase the V a little bit. The vortex lattice becomes more square, and eventually all of them will be pinned down to the optical potential. So by.
So where are the maxima of the optical potential?
It's the black ones, black dots. Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the vortices are maxima and sometimes at minimum of the optical.
No, they are all in the antinodes of the optical potential.
The green dots is again.
Well, in these plots I do not show the optical potential, but in my next slide we'll see where the antinodes.
What's the order of magnitude of the helium length relative to the optical period?
It's much smaller. It's like an order of magnitude smaller.
The helium length is smaller.
Yes.
So
helium provides the core for some
really. So why did the helium lengths? So why did the cores get so big?
Oh, because they are pinned by the repulsive.
In the first one. You said the helium length is an order of magnitude smaller.
The healing length compared to the spacing is about 0.1. I'm sorry.
What kind of density would you require to get that condition fulfilled?
What kind of density?
Yeah.
We use the real parameters. So the density is, I think in this calculation is about 2 × 10^5 atom, rubidium atoms, with the rubidium scaling length. Yes.
Something bothering you?
Maybe the things of pi and so forth makes all right, but I'm a bit puzzled that you can get the, but still maintaining presumably condition NAS cubed much less than 1, since you want to be applying Gospodarsky, you can still get to a region where the helium length is small compared to the lattice period.
Now I know the reason. Here we actually choose a filling factor equals 1, so the period of the laser is phi infrared.
Okay.
So, far infrared. So the wavelength is like several microns.
Factor, what's that?
Oh,
filling factor.
What is this?
What does that mean? Number of atoms per well?
Filling factor is.
Let Han answer the question.
It's important.
Yeah.
Number of atoms is per well.
Yeah.
Number of particles is much larger.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Of course.
Okay, here are more. Here are examples. So the grids are the optical potentials. Each intersection of the dashed line represents the antinode of the optical potential. So this is for filling factor equal to 2. And this circle represents the Thomas Fermi radius. And again, when I increase V, for very small V, you have a triangular lattice, slightly distorted. Okay. And when V is increased, the system gets gradually pinned down to the optical lattice.
Where's the warning
number go? Well, here the filling factor is 2, so there are twice as vortices as pinning sites. Yeah, so each antinode will attract a pair of vortices, and the vortices near the edge, of course, get pinned first because they have a weaker intervortex interaction. So more sensitive to the pinning.
So can you get arbitrarily can you get vortices of arbitrary winding number? I mean, if you have 100 vortices per
lattice, you will.
Then, I mean, there's not physical numbers, but I'm just curious. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think so.
Huh. And then when you turn it off suddenly, do the vortices? Because these are 2D or 3D simulations?
These are 2D.
2D. So then, do the vortices decay or do they not decay?
Yeah, I'm sure they will decompose. We haven't studied the dynamics, but I'm quite sure.
No thermal cloud.
Yeah.
Because the 2D goes by this equation, they don't decay.
Actually, oh, if you have no dissipation, you mean?
Right.
Okay.
I'm okay.
Let's continue to move on.
That's about it.
You have 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's fine. I can take questions.
One question, yeah. If you had that optical lattice with bigger spacing between the lattice, and the lattice mm-hmm. would you get like domains of optical vortices?
Oh,
original
yeah.
spacing in each domain?
Yeah, you will see, actually. Yeah. So this is for filling factor equal to 2, then this is for filling factor equal to 1/2, then you get a check for the lattice. So the nearest neighbor is not occupied, but the next nearest neighbor is occupied. OK, so here are the domains. So this is the structure at the large V limit. So all the vortices are pinned down to the optical lattice. So in general, when the filling factor is not close to an integer or inverse integer, then you get domains. So for this one, a filling factor is 1.8, then you get domains for the singly charged vortices and doubly charged vortices. And the domains are separated by walls, which are roughly parallel to each other, so indicating a repulsive domain wall interaction. And here at 1.5, the singly charged vortices and doubly charged vortices form a interlocking check for the lattices with each other.
So when eta is an irrational number, so that, I mean, the two lattices, one x lattice and optical lattice have inconversion periods.
Yeah.
The domain wall should appear at any small potential. Is that true?
We haven't checked it yet. You mean?
The statement about stability
okay,
of
one
lattice when we have incommensurate, and it's connected with stability of long range order in the vortex lattice with respect to disorders.
Okay.
Where is that?
I suspect that's true, but we haven't checked it. Okay. Yeah. Okay, for a filling factor smaller than 1, then you get domains that separate by the crossing domain walls, and so you have square lattice and the checkerboard lattice domains. So this is pretty much the end, and the future directions is to understand the phase, the structure phase transitions in more detail, and to calculate the excitation modes, which will tell us more of the system, and we want to study what the effect of the optical potential on the melting problem, and maybe other type of optical potentials. Okay.
How is